Margaret Goes Modern, Part 3. For the second time in a week, Margaret leaves Thimble Pleasures loaded down with new purchases. She has a lop here, Studio Supreme slider, free motion machine quilting mat, Fonz and Porter machine quilting grip gloves, two books on free motion quilting by a woman she's never heard of, named Angela Walters, and a darning foot for her Benina. "Do you drink?" Erica asked her while they were standing in front of the Notions wall. And when Margaret replied that she had a glass of wine on occasion, Erica smiled. "Good. A glass of wine is your best friend when you're machine quilting. The key is to be as relaxed as possible while still being able to operate heavy machinery." Then Erica called to a woman leafing through pattern books across the room. "Lauren, come meet Margaret. I'm converting her to machine quilting." "Hold on to your wallet," Lauren said as she crossed the room. When she reached them, she put her arm around Erica and pulled her close. "I think Sheila has this one on commission." "Margaret, I'd like you to meet my girlfriend, Lauren," Erica said, leaning into Lauren's embrace. "She exaggerates, but only slightly. Sheila has been known to toss a couple of yards of Kona solids my way after a particularly good sale." "I like the quilt you showed today, Lauren," Margaret said, proud of herself for talking to the woman in a normal tone of voice, as though she met lesbians every day of the week. "I thought it was lovely."
"Did you really?" Lauren asked.
"I don't know. It looked so good in my head, but in real life, I'm not sure it works." Margaret laid a reassuring hand on the young woman's arm. "I'm new to modern quilting, but I'm not new to design or color, and I thought your quilt was quite striking."
"I can't believe those are your first modern quilts," Lauren said, squeezing Margaret's hand. "They're great. Have you decided how you're going to quilt them?"
"Erica has offered several ideas," Margaret told her. Lauren rolled her eyes. "I'm sure she has," she said. "Erica has lots of opinions." "All of them correct," Erica added. Thinking about the two women as she loads her bags into the back seat of her car, Margaret smiles. They are in their mid-20s, both of them in graduate school for social work. Talking with them, Margaret was reminded what a wonderful, terrible thing it is to be a young adult, old enough to be out of your parents' house and not tethered to marriage, mortgages, or children, but still so young and insecure. She can still see Ginny when they'd picked her up from the airport one Christmas. She'd been 23 or 24. Walking into the waiting area in her leather jacket, raggedy flannel shirt, and holy jeans over black tights, her short hair dyed red, those horrible black boots she wore every single day she was home, even when they went to church. She looked like someone who belonged in the cast of Oliver Twist. But she was so full of dreams. Maybe she'd get a job writing television screenplays in Los Angeles. Maybe she'd start a restaurant. "You are a marvelous mess," James had said to her one night, and Ginny had laughed. "Emphasis on the marvelous, I'm sure," she'd said dryly. "Emphasis on the mess," Margaret remembers thinking. Sighing, Margaret gets in the car and puts the key in the ignition. Maybe if she'd done a better job trying to understand who Ginny was in her late teens and early 20s, listened to some of the music she loved so much, read some of her favorite novels, she could have steered her in the right direction, away from the alcoholic musician boyfriends and bartending jobs of her post-college years. But no, Margaret hadn't taken Ginny's interest seriously, couldn't believe that Jenny took them seriously. James tried to do those things, she remembers. He read the books, listened to the music. He called Jenny every Sunday afternoon, talked with whichever housemate answered the phone wherever Jenny was living, Seattle, Austin, Minneapolis, made jokes, tried to connect. And now Jenny was the one making the phone calls, trying to connect. If she ever got a tattoo on her forearm, and Margaret seriously hoped she wouldn't, it would be of her father, not her mother. James was the hero. Margaret was the one always saying no. By the time Margaret gets home, it's almost 8 o'clock. James and the children are watching a movie in the family room. Jenny is in the kitchen, on the computer. "I thought you went to a meeting," she says when she sees Margaret with her bags. "It looks like you've been to the mall." "Oh, you know how it is with quilting," Margaret tells her daughter, depositing the bags on the kitchen table. "You can't walk out of the quilt shop without spending at least $100. "I thought that was Target," Jenny says, laughing. "Or at least that's always been my problem at Target. I went in last week to get a new laundry basket and came home with 2 rugs, 3 trash cans, a scented candle, and a week's worth of groceries. The funny thing is, I forgot to get the laundry basket." She stands. "Want me to make you a cup of tea before I go?" "That would be lovely," Margaret says, taking a seat at the table. "My meeting was fun, but I think I'm worn out now." "I'm so glad you're still quilting," Jenny says. She walks over to the stove and reaches for the kettle. "I think that's really important." "Quilting has always been important to me," Margaret replies. "Why would that be different now?" "I'm just saying, what with Dad being sick." Margaret, uninterested in pursuing this line of conversation, cuts her daughter off. "Do you remember that band you used to work for?" she asks. "What were they called?" "The Naked Pants." Jenny's eyes widen. "What in the world made you think of that?" "I don't know," Margaret says with a shrug. "So, was it the Naked Pants?" "The Naked Trousers. I used to manage them, which just means I got them gigs and clubs around Austin. But really, what made you think of that?" "Did you know your dad tracked down a CD they made? This was in the days before iTunes, maybe even before the internet. So he had to go to some hole-in-the-wall record store downtown and order it. One day, I went back to his study, and there he was, listening to the Naked Trousers. When I asked him what he thought, he said, 'I don't know if I like it, but it's interesting.'" Jenny carries the kettle to the sink to fill it. It's a moment before she speaks. "I didn't know he did that," she says in a ragged voice. "He never told me." "You are always his favorite," Margaret says. "I mean, he loved all of you so much, but you were special." Jenny looks out the kitchen window. "How can you stand it? How can you stand what's happening to him?" "Nothing's happened yet," Margaret says. "At least not much has happened. I refuse to mourn him before he's gone." Jenny turns and looks at her. "I want to help you, Mom." "Then make me some tea. I'd like peppermint." Jenny makes the tea, and Margaret begins pulling everything from her bags, the gloves, the quilting mat, the books. "I met some very nice young women at the meeting tonight," she says, trying on one of the gloves. "They had tattoos. Well, Lauren only had a small tattoo on her wrist, but Erica had two sleeves. Ginny sniffs, then laughs. "How do you even know what a sleeve is?" she asks, walking over to the table, carrying two mugs of tea. "I'm very modern these days," Margaret says. "Erica has a tattoo of her mother on her arm. Maybe I'll get a tattoo. A sewing machine or a needle and thread. What do you think?" "I know a guy in Evansville. Very clean shop," Ginny says. She sits down across the table from Margaret. "I have a tattoo, you know."
"I know. A tiger on your hip. Susan told me."
Ginny shakes her head.
"She is such a fink."
They drink their tea without talking. Just as Ginny starts to push her chair away from the table, Cam walks into the kitchen, his face pale.
"Gramps keeps calling me Glenn," he reports, "even after I told him a bunch of times that I'm Cam, not Glenn. It's starting to scare me."
"He knows who you are, honey. He's just tired," Ginny tells him, standing up. "Why don't you get your things and tell Jenna it's time to go?" When Cam leaves the room, Ginny turns and looks at Margaret.
"What?"
Margaret asks, her voice defiant. But she can't hold Ginny's gaze. Instead, she opens one of the machine quilting books and starts flipping through the pages. She sees a quilt that reminds her of Lauren's, and she wonders if Lauren and Erica are home by now, if they've poured themselves glasses of wine and are at work on new quilts. What had she told Erica during the meeting? That she wished she and Ginny had the kind of relationship where they told each other the truth about themselves? Margaret's eyes blur with tears. How can she tell the truth when she's such a liar?
"Mom, are you okay?"
Margaret nods, and then she shakes her head. No, she is not okay. She is a million miles away from okay. "I am scared," she whispers, staring straight ahead. "I am scared that one day your father will wake up, and he won't know who I am." Ginny comes and puts her hands on Margaret's shoulders. She leans down so that their cheeks are touching. "I like that quilt in your book," she says after a minute, her voice soft. "The one on the left-hand page."
"That one?"
Margaret asks, pointing to a quilt made up of rows of stars. Wonky stars, Sheila would call them. Hot pink stars against a dark blue sky.
"That's the one," Ginny says, sitting down next to her.
"How hard would it be to make that one?"
"Not hard at all," Margaret says. "Do you want me to make it for you?"
"No, I mean, how hard would it be for me to make it?" Jenny's voice is gentle, and suddenly Margaret realizes her daughter is trying to give her a gift. Has been trying to give her gifts for a long time now, only Margaret hasn't known how to receive them. She thinks of Erica's tattoo, her way of telling her mother, "I love you."
"Not hard at all," Margaret says, and for some reason she's blinking back tears again. "There's not much to it. I could help. Picking out the right colors would be the hardest thing. As Erica says, if you're going to keep it simple, you better make it beautiful."
"Erica's the one with the tattoos?"
"Yeah, that's the one.
You'd like her, I think.
And not just because of the tattoos. She reminds me of you at that age."
Ginny looks suspicious.
"In a good way or a bad way?"
Margaret looks at her daughter.
For the first time, she notices the wrinkles fanning out from the corners of Jenny's eyes, the strands of gray in her hair. She reaches over and pats Jenny's hand. "Erica reminds me of you in a marvelous way, I'd say. Now, let's talk about this quilt you're going to make." The end of Margaret Goes Modern.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.